Good morning, everyone. My name is Jean-Paul Laforêt. I'm Dean of Agriculture and Agri-Food at Laval University, and I will have the pleasure to co-chair this morning with Dr. Douglas Edley, the first test session of the morning before the break. I first want to thank our colleague, the Dean Chandramanamutu, for the invitation and for the organization of that meeting, which is, as usual, very interesting and with a lot of very not only interesting, but pertinent topics. And this morning, the topic will be response of the International Development Agencies to food security, and we will have the chance to have four great speakers to talk to us about that. When we talk about food security, we have a tendency to think at the national, regional, and even local level. That's where solutions have to be developed. That's where the research has to be done and the transfer has to be done, too. But we know that it has to be also of an international concern, and that international organizations are there, and among other things, to support initiative at local level, to coordinate the initiative, and to also promote networking among the different stakeholders. So today we'll have four speakers, as I said, who will talk about the role of different roles of different international agencies. And they will present in the order that you will see that you see in the program. So first of all, I want to introduce our first speaker, Mrs. Rebecca Young, who's senior economist in Canadian Department of Finance, Ottawa. Rebecca works on international development policy as a senior economist with the Canadian Department of Finance. In this position, most recently, she has been exploring the potential of innovative financing mechanism to promote agricultural innovation in developing countries. She has also worked at CEDA. Prior to joining government, Rebecca worked on development and private sector issues with the World Business Council for Sustainable Development and Hatch Associates. She holds an MBA from INSEAD, a master's degree in environmental assessment and evaluation from the London School of Economics, and a chemical engineering degree from McGill University. Let's welcome Ms. Rebecca Young, please.
Thank you very much. And before I start, I actually have to say that that my presentation today reflects my personal views and not necessarily those of my department. And so should I be so lucky as to say something profound and you wish to quote me, you should quote me as a former McGill student. Thank you. We are very fortunate to have Minister Oda speak to some of Canada's accomplishments in food security and agricultural development. So today I don't plan to spend a lot of time on this issue, but I think some of the points that are worth highlighting is that we did have an unprecedented response to food aid immediately following the food crisis in 2007-08, and we were one of the largest donors to the World Food Programme. We made sure that these dollars went even further by fully untying this aid. We were also among the first to live up to our G8 food security commitment in L'Aquila by more than doubling our spending in sustainable agricultural development. And as you've heard, this is now a thematic priority for CEDA going forward. So there's clear Canadian leadership in this area. But as I say, what in the spirit of this conference, really an idea space, very rich in experience and expertise, I'd really like to spend a bit more time today, not necessarily on what we've done so far, but perhaps where collectively we could go going forward in terms of a new approach to funding innovation in agricultural productivity for developing countries. So a good place to start, I don't know if many of you noticed this text buried in one of the annexes in Toronto from the G20 leaders' commitment, but the highlights of this are really an acknowledgement by G20 leaders that there is an urgent need for accelerating investments in R&D for agricultural productivity. And they acknowledge that the private sector is a critical source of innovation. And so they're looking at ways, how do we bring in the private sector? And they've made a commitment to explore what they've called advanced market commitments. And what I'd like to do today, actually, is try to decipher what that could mean going forward. And I should also note that much of what I'm presenting today is actually very well laid out in a paper written by the Center for Global Development. This is a prominent think tank based in Washington, D.C. that the Finance Department had commissioned. I think in this room, I don't need to spend time on making the case for agriculture. And I think that we're all very familiar with some of the challenges that we face in agricultural productivity. We do see productivity growth declines. We see yield gaps widening between the developed and the developing world. We have limited scope for expansion, and on top of that, you have mounting environmental stresses. So we have a real challenge facing us. I think that the FAO statistics are pretty stark, that we have a population expected to grow to over 9 billion by 2050, and to actually feed this population, we're going to need increases in food sources and production by 70%. So you can see this as a challenge, but you can also see it as an opportunity. And so how do we use innovation to start closing some of these gaps? And I've highlighted here just a few ways, including higher crop yields, healthier livestock, higher effective crops, so looking at inputs, be it fertilizers, be it irrigation technologies, as well as at the end of the value chain in terms of post-harvest storage techniques, drying technologies, and also the capacity for improved nutrition in the foods that we are producing. And so if we look at agriculture innovation, it's a very classic case of a public good that by some estimates, for every dollar of investment, there are $9 of social value created. But when you look at the statistics, we've had decades of underinvestment in agricultural innovation. And virtually no private sector. So it's a classic case of a public good where there's just no private sector investment happening there. And so excuse me for putting on my economist hat right now, but if we try to understand why is this happening, why is there no private sector in agricultural innovation for developing countries, it's a very classic case of market failures. So you have significant externalities, which basically mean that private sector can't appropriate sufficient benefits from their investments, hence they don't make the investments. You have things like many reasons, but one is just the lack of IP protection, certainly the informality of markets. If you look at, for example, seed practices, where there's not a formal market for selling seeds. It's often seed saving from year to year, bartering in local markets, and not to mention just the decentralization of markets in terms of smallholder farming. You also have very significant information asymmetries. I, for one, sitting in Ottawa in the finance department, would not be in a position to pick the winners, especially given the number of research centers, for example, in Africa. I saw one statistic that there are over 400 research centers. And so in some cases, it becomes more difficult for donors to be able to actually narrow in and find out where is the next winning idea coming from. You also have then, in some cases, information asymmetries between the researchers and the farmers. And so you have some well-documented cases of things like enhanced nutritious sweet potatoes that farmers don't actually plant because it's redder than what they're used to. And so it doesn't address the farmer preferences. So these are sort of a few reasons why, and I should mention then on top of those market failures, you have very distinct needs in places like Africa. You have different ecological conditions, different staple products, and different technologies. So there's very little spillover from the R&D investments that are happening in the developed world. So I think then that sort of begs the question, at least for the economists, I would say, is, well, we think that the private sector holds a key to unlocking some of this innovation, but they're just not there. They're just not making the investments. And so can we design a mechanism that could use donor funds to actually incentivize the private sector in this area with the ultimate goal of trying to catalyze and accelerate the development, adaption, and adoption of needed innovations? And so we're really talking about, if we want to attract the private sector, how do we provide predictable and sustainable long-term prices for these improved technologies? And, of course, definitely not least, is to be able to demonstrate a measurable impact on economic and social welfare. And so distinctive features of such a funding mechanism could be really how do you create or guarantee a market for a period of time using government funds such that the private sector does have sufficient signals to be able to make the risk-reward assessment when they're deciding on their R&D allocations. And it's also in terms of addressing information asymmetries, then would have a pay on results ex post award or milestone approach so that you actually incentivize the researchers to either partner on the ground with civil society or go out into the field and speak to learn about preferences in the field of the farmers. And one type of tool, just to add a little more detail to it, is this idea of an advanced market commitment. Now that this is what the G20 have referenced as, can we look at this type of mechanism to see how it complements what we're doing? And Canada certainly has some experience in this area that we've recently incentivized a pneumococcal vaccine for human population, which I won't go into that today, but it's certainly an area that we have experience with. But basically, you know, for definition, an advanced market commitment is a binding contract by donors to subsidize up to 100%, i.e. could pay the full value for a predefined product at a set price and volume if discovered and demanded. And so it's really, as I say, to provide the private sector with sufficient incentive to make the investments and know that, you know, have a clear understanding of what reward they can expect for these innovations. And then it also gives them the incentive that the payout is only if they actually get out into the field. The technologies can't sit on the shelf. And to add a little more color, I'll spend a bit of time giving a few examples that certainly you could look at drought or pest-resistant seeds, and I've highlighted finger millet in some of the crop losses that result from that. And so donors could, as an example, define a certain price that they'd be willing to pay per hectare of a new type of seed that was planted and delivered certain benefits or certain pest-resistant qualities. I think that post-harvest crop losses would not be unfamiliar to anyone in this room. They're very significant losses in the field. And so you can look at types of solar-fed hermetic storage solutions that are accessible and affordable in a very small scale for smallhold farmers. And so you could see some sort of mechanism where donors could define a price that they would be willing to pay for some type of technology that meets the conditions that smallhold farmers would face. A couple of others, fortification technologies would certainly hold potential. You could see, and the idea I'll mention now actually came from a competition held by Gain and Ashoka last year, and it was the idea of could you come up with a very small-scale milling technology that would weigh and dispense nutrients into grains at an affordable cost that, you know, at the small scale we're talking about. Crop management is another, improving the quality of food. Aflatoxin is a very toxic fungal byproduct that affects many major African crops, and there are some technologies out there that have been tested but not scaled up, so you could see a donor guarantee there holding potential. And then the final one I'll speak to is livestock health, is that you can see that you could have incentivized animal vaccines, much like we did with human vaccines, and there's certainly work going on by GalvMed to look at this type of mechanism. And so as I conclude, I would like to drive home the point that what I'm talking about today is by no means a panacea, that it's just one very small piece of a very big puzzle that we have when we're looking at agricultural productivity. And the graph that I've put up here is a typical innovation curve and a clear acknowledgement that we have very essential investments in basic research that need to happen and that we can't let up on the gas pedal there, because we really need this strong foundation of information from which we can pull then applied applications. I think on the right hand you have a sort of a scale up that then once you have these innovations you really need to get them into the field. And what I've talked about today is really sort of providing a space for a market test. So you have good ideas, you want to get out, get into the field and see where there's actually a market that could be sustainable over the long term. And then even to take a step back, I'm only talking about R&D. I'm not talking about critical investments in things like capacity building, infrastructure, governance, all these things that are very important if the R&D is actually to be successful. And so just to conclude, rather than having conclusions, actually I would just sort of put out some questions there, which either, you know, I'd like to hear back from you either online or offline, is how do we pull innovations into the field? How do we effectively engage the private sector in long-term solutions? And where do you think that this type of mechanism could work? Thank you.